interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate challenge, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricket Tude Busting episode PTWRLM 632. But remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. Because you don't know what you missed until you make the switch and get you behind the woodshed. But that dose of reality. Because you can't go wrong when you get behind the woodshed. I've been saying that open for long years. I hope you all appreciate it. I hope we all do that. No one's going to do this but for ourselves. Because they don't care for as much as they want to say they do. You got to be free. You got to know you're in an environment that's free. And I have to suggest that that's going to be a little bit of a task. And we see the stories in the news, and I want to, at least for this, every broadcast, actually, there's no actual politics in what I talk about. We're not talking about parties. It just feeds into that uniparty idea. And so I'm talking about principles underlying this. And again, part of the premise is you know them when you see them. We talk in that context relative to military occupations, or you go see the Lieber Code, read about it, read on and on about it, and see the evidence, which was adopted into international law as well as other international laws and provisions and principles. And that's just how I go and work through this, what comes to my attention through the what we they tell us is the news. I call it the news-tis. It's notice. It's news. It's a notice if you know what you're looking for. And you're being told what's really going on if we just paid attention. We'd also hopefully get out of what we think is our opinions and get into something that's a lot more factual and study those things. But interesting little thing went on. It was very hard to find the video. I don't have a link to the video. Someone, if you're interested, you can track this one down. I finally found nearer to the beginning of this whole altercation that makes the news as well. The news is to us. And found that was key in understanding what may have been going on. And one little other tidbit of information that this senator that I'm going to be speaking to was in contact with Kristi Noem on this part before. So he wasn't unknown, even though he wasn't identified, which is a potential problem on this. I'll give the administration that much. However, he wasn't unknown to the people that are in government, and she ignores him completely. So that kind of told me this is a little bit of a setup. And again, the administration is taking advantage in trying to buffalo people, push their position through. And my main contention, again, non-political, just what's the law? And the law should be very clear, and it doesn't matter what party you are, it doesn't matter who you, what your beliefs is. You take an oath to uphold the law in the office that you've taken, and you better uphold that law before, not after, you act. Senator reacts after being shoved to the floor and handcuffed. The other thing about this, again, multiple facets to these stories. I don't get to all of it hardly at all a lot of times. For those of us that are in the occupied territory, this is not unheard of treatment, is it? But it is relative to this senator, and this is one of the things we can pay attention to. And we start to see, again, maybe just it's up to us to notice this, whether or not you think you actually live in the place that you're told you're living in. Senator Alex Padilla addressed on Thursday the incident in which he was shoved to the floor and handcuffed after trying to ask a question of DHS Secretary Kristi Noem. The video of the altercation shows Padilla identifying himself and seeking to ask Noem a question. Quote, I'm Senator Alex Padilla. I have questions for the Secretary because of the fact of the matter is half of the dozen criminals that you're rotating on your... And the lawmaker said as he was being pushed out of the door by multiple officials. In fact, he was being pushed before he even got started talking about this when you see the video. Moments before Padilla's removal, Noem had been discussing the anti-ICE protests happening across Los Angeles. She said her officer planned to stay in the city to liberate from the socialist burdensome leadership that this governor and this mayor have placed on this country. Gnome kept talking as Padilla attempted to address her directly. And this is where I wanted to finally get a video, and I finally found it. In fact, she does talk. She continues talking like there's nobody else in the room making any kind of a noise. In fact, what I didn't see was her stop her statement, be interrupted by that, and tell whoever it was, even if she didn't know who it was, tell them that she'll take questions after she was done speaking. Instead, you can listen to how she's just driving through this statement that she's making. And also, I got to thinking, maybe it's tied to the lack of intelligence to understand what a habeas corpus is. Remember, we talked about that in last past episodes. But Gnome kept talking as Padilla attempted to address her. That's when already there was apparently FBI on him, pushing him out of the room. Quote, Secretary, I want to know why you insist on exaggerating, and Padilla said before he was cut off in the scuffle with the security officials ensued. So if you, just a point that I want to make on these principles that are going on, there is no presumption of either innocence or governmental authority. If we look about that on this, this Homeland Security official is the authority, apparently. And so this is they were questioning of, well, they didn't identify, he didn't have a senatorial pin or something. Again, many, many people have had to do this. You stop what you're saying, you hold your mark where you're at, and you tell them you'll take questions. She did none of that. Quote, if this is how the department, this is Padilla speaking, if this is how the Department of Homeland Security responds to a senator with a question, you can only imagine what they're doing to farm workers, Alex Padilla said. Well, maybe we're not in Kansas anymore, Toto. Gnome seemed to imply later during an appearance on Fox News that Padilla will not face any charges for the incident, denying assertions that he had been arrested. She said, quote, she had in a conversation with the senator after this, claiming that no one knew who he was, even though he had been heard identifying himself in the video. And I think the timing on all that's also important. And you don't see any let-up, and then they claim that they didn't know even after he said so that he was. And in one regard, I can agree with if there was a real security issue, but he's not actually, it was contested that he was lunging at her. You don't see any of that in the video whatsoever. And so this is the problem with, we start to tell fibs here and there, and then you start to look at who's telling them and why they might do it. And we might start to see a little bit more. So, essentially, all I can say for my purposes, the principles that I see going on as we're trying to parse through all this chaos that we're watching now, and all I can say is welcome to the post-founding father Lincolnized occupied America, folks. But trust the plan. And make America great again. Again? You mean pre-Lincoln era occupation? Yeah, not likely. In particular, with the post-Lincoln era modernization Siberian gulag that Trump and the Congress are insisting on with that new, big, beautiful bull that they keep spouting about. That includes Palantir. We get a little bit of news blurb about Palantir in the past, working together with the government. Palantir's secret war inside the plot to cripple WikiLeaks. So long before they helped the Israelis, the Zionists, use the AI and tracking to kill Palestinians, Palantir's been there working on and on, and you've heard me talking about it recently. It's now becoming more and more into the news cycle about this. People are finally catching on, and gladly so, but again, this is not unknown, a large part. In 2011, Palantir and H.B. Gary Federal drafted an attack plan targeting WikiLeaks on behalf of a Bank of America, according to the post by the Julian Assange-founded organization on X. Palantir spied on WikiLeaks servers, staff, and allies, tracking server migrations across the U.S. and Europe. And my sense on that is those of us that will eventually be working our own servers to try and keep the content out and keep it going and keep it available you listen for this trick and they can keep track of where you're going. I don't think that was impossible to know. Anybody that knows this knows that. The point is that they are already in the game of tracking people down, and to keep hide in the sewers is going to be a little bit difficult, and to keep yourself secure is going to be as difficult as we move in through this modernized world into the future that they want. I mean, that Siberian gulag that they're building, they built it. It's just a matter of attaching everybody in now. They advocated a rapid assault on WikiLeaks, touting their expertise in cybersecurity, insider threats, targeting analysis, and social media manipulation. Proposed tactics included fuel infighting, sow discord among WikiLeaks supporters, spread disinformation, submit fake documents to WikiLeaks, then publicly expose the error, undermine infrastructure confidence, plant stories questioning system security, launch cyber attacks, unmask sources and document submitters. Again, last episode we were hearing that the main platforms are doing that already. And we start to see a bigger picture than just Palantir. It's already seemingly locked in. It's already been worked and practiced and ongoing. And this date is 2011. If you're just hearing it, just accept that you're that far behind. Maybe you should have got behind what you said earlier, but you're that far behind on really what's going on. Those of you that do understand this, they're keeping up and keeping ahead. So we got, on that side, we got a lot of work too. They wanted to discredit WikiLeaks. They want to launch campaigns to paint the platform as a radical and reckless, to erode public trust, discredit employees through social media profiling. And, I mean, you listen through this list, and this is like all the things that are going on right now by lots of organizations. They wanted to isolate WikiLeaks by cutting ties with prominent journalists. But without the support of people like Glenn Greenwald, WikiLeaks would fold, close quote. But again, Oudmanyar was the owner of the publication that Greenwald worked with that took the information from Snowjob Snowden, and we didn't see but a speck of that. So again, one of the potential players right in here, and oh, by the way, Glenn Greenwald's an attorney. They wanted to pressure WikiLeaks backers among established journalists, because if pushed, they would choose professional preservation over WikiLeaks' cause. Now soon to be able to say, trust us, we're with the government, as Palantir is absorbed into the hive, into the Borg, and Trump is helping, and all of your Congress creators are too. And what about, we're here from the corporation and deliver you a poison apple a day, all day. Apple introduces digital passport IDs, marking major step toward normalized digital ID integration. What begins as a convenience quickly becomes the new baseline for showing ID in a wider scenario of situations. Apple's latest announcement at WWDC 2025 marks another step in the steady integration of digital identity into the everyday mobile technology, with iOS 26 set to introduce a passport-based digital IDs and Apple Wallet. Users will soon be able to present a digital form of identification that supported TSA checkpoints and within certain apps requiring age or identity verification. Apple reiterated that the feature is, quote, not a replacement for your physical passport, close quote, but it will serve as an official ID for domestic travel and other select uses. The privileged class, folks. Where's this equity and equality they've been talking about? The Transportation Security Administration has confirmed it will accept digital passports for security screenings on domestic flights, effectively extending the reach of biometric and device-linked identity systems into routine aspects of public life. The shift is part of a larger trend, the normalization of digital ID as a prerequisite for everyday interactions. A prerequisite for everyday interactions, folks, being normalized today. An apple a day, all day. Yum. So if we're with the government, who's behind the LA anti-ICE riots? And this whole thing is, to my mind, there's so many loose ends that could be on the, into this, so many angles on this. I just can't even imagine. I was thinking about this for a long time, reading this article. Interesting question, but I don't know if we could ever get to the bottom of it, at least on the surface and as it's working. As we hear, President Donald Trump called the Los Angeles protests paid, but who could be behind the havoc? And understand, as we see these articles, they very well could be propaganda pieces. And the people that are being identified may or may not be party, or they may or may not be part of the propaganda in dispensing with it, in presenting it. So we bring out the old nemesis again, Soros in the shadows. Quote, allegations of funding leaks to Soros Open Society Foundation have been raised. Dr. Marco Marsili, researcher at Ca Foscari University of Venice, tells Sputnik. What if it isn't Soros, but the playmasters are using the same techniques or even the organizations of Soros? The protests aren't spontaneous. There's a structured strategy behind them, he claims. The Color Revolution playbook, Marsili outlines hallmarks of the Soros-style uprising. Protesters linked to well-funded Democrat-aligned NGOs, liberal media frame riots as moral resistance, symbolic activism, hashtag slogans spread rapidly, federal agencies portrayed as oppressive. Now, let me offer a little fun side story about all this. While there was a Antifa rioting over in LA, some so-called right-wing MAGA was planting "I like MAGA" on their cars, and they started in the Antifa came back, started beating up each other's cars. The right wing, if you will, is not above using the same slogans and hashtags and spreading them around to cause chaos. And I thought that was pretty brilliant. Anyway, so if someone knows this technique and can get groups to execute the technique, because the controlling operators have been inside those groups, does it have to be Soros to turn on the machine? So remember, Soros works with or as an agent of the CIA or in other theaters, such as Ukraine. And again, this leveraged funding, this your tax dollars are at work. One group behind the LA Unrest Coalition for Humane Immigrant Rights got $34 million in U.S. government grants in 2023 alone. So be careful of the dating here and when they got this money. It's also linked to Soros-funded programs like Soros Justice Fellowship. And I'm pointing this out about look at the past because maybe this is just someone pointing out that that's what happened. But the one you're reading from, the rights writing the story, that's telling the story, that's telling the narrative, isn't those at all. So these things that we had heard in the news about Doge picking up may have given somebody an idea. So this title here in the section says, Your Tax Dollars at Work, when it references U.S. grants, not Soros funding. So I thought that Trump said he'd stop that type of funding to groups. And yet we see references to it. And we're now seeing that there's different types of bundlings that went on, and this funding is actually still going on. Maybe Trump didn't go far enough. Maybe Doge didn't go far enough. And my question is, was that planned? Fake protests go viral. U.S. author Scott Adams denounced the LA protests as fake and paid by wealthy Democrats and Soros-linked organizations in a video post on X. He believes the real goal is to create chaos and undermine Trump. So did Trump just pick this up and say, oh, he thinks they're paid? That we see an echo chamber being developed here? Who is running these things at the LA? Or maybe all of them? Maybe others that we don't even know about. Who dropped the bricks is another question. No, not the BRICS, Economic Association. No, the real bricks, building bricks. Who dropped them? Just like last time. Again, we're watching some, they're just reiterating what happened in the last thing that no one liked. Everyone wanted to stop, well, except for the subversives. Conservative ex-influencers spotlighted pallets of bricks conveniently dropped at protest sites across Los Angeles. Bricks, rocks, and Molotov cocktails are used against law enforcement. Whether the bricks are used or not, what would it take to drop a load of bricks off as a distraction? To make it appear Soros-esque. The question is organized? Are these organized issues? LA Council member Eunices Hernandez, quote, when they show up, we got to show up even stronger. Conservatives say she all but admits on camera that the ICE riots are Democrat organized. But you see, it says conservatives say. That's not proof. The BLM 2.0 with a twist, observers say it's the repetition of 2020 BLM riots. Conservative blogger Andy NGO notes Antifa's back in the mix too. So how observant these pattern recognition bots are, don't you think? This is all that's going on right now. Someone's just restating patterns. We haven't really heard any proof of who done it, who's doing it. The question is, are these desperate moves to stop Trump? Zero Hedge alleges the LA protests are a last-ditch Democrat effort to sabotage Trump after their Doge-fueled unrest flopped. The goal? Spark a fresh national riot wave. Again, more allegations without proof. And the suggestions are all myopic. So let's expand here the horizon a touch. And we're talking about nearly inescapable societal surveillance, remember, starting with this Palantir, what the big, beautiful bull is all about and where they're what they're bringing in, as I've been reporting here month after month now, relative and since the Trump moved in and made it obvious. So let's jump to China, a premier example, instead of Soros. Is there a different philanthropath supporting Chinese causes? Well, sustainable and development at all. Remember, this is a global matter. Then there's the ostensible Soros counterparts like Neville Singham, who promoted pro-Palestinian narratives through his NGOs, but more consistent with Netanyahu's creation of Hamas, who used Palantir to more efficiently commit genocide. Another Soros counterpart is Pierre Omidyar. Remember, as I said, Glenn Greenwald and of Snowden fame. These are all counterparts. They work similarly in different aspects. Remember, these narratives can be woven together as well to produce the outcome that they want, and each player taking his advantage while America is defeated from within. And we're all, the technocrats can unite, correct? When consideration is given to the observations of many, many posters, and a list is made of all the important potentials, as might be seen scrolling through an ex-Twitter feed, it's conceivable this is a season of chaos as a war plan being executed against the American people. Trump thinks or makes believe he is fighting for the right cause, but he empowers that enemy from within, as I've been mentioning and pointing out. And the title of the last episode, Do They Know? It seems Yuri Bezmenov, also mentioned in last episode, was right. Either the American people are defeated in themselves, a large part of the feed of those people agreeing with destruction of their rights under this misguided notion of what patriotism is, willing to abandon all the constitutional constraints upon government. And someone actually advocating for the suspension of habeas was really the highlight of that. many people, actually. It wasn't just one. Then I noticed this well-known celebrity was identified as an attorney who should know better, right? I mean, this is the clues, the clear and obvious clues that just something's not right in all of this. And that's when this whole L.A. riots affair took on a different look and depth for me, when I started to see this, as well as some of the other things wrapped into the distraction. This conservative celebrity, a Torner, just happened to be one of the privileged to receive the first batch of JFK files in that photo op promotion that ultimately went nowhere, but was fodder for the faithful from the White House and through Trump. And that happened just about the time the alternative media, so-called, was given access to the White House press pool. Right, Tim? At about the same time old Tim Pool, was promoted to have contracted with the not-so-free speech platform Crumble that also aligned itself with Trump's Truth Social. Then when I started to see the earmarks, even a nicked earmarks, feeding into what is appearing to be a planned operation, the foreign agents started pressing for some of the outcomes that occurred to me could be forming up if this were a military-style operation that looks like a riot in L.A. against We the People. An influencer said to be a journalist calls for exactly what We the People would not want if free meant anything, someone of increasingly questionable identity and allegiance as well. This is someone that has been seen to have an increasing access and influence to the White House, just recently visiting Vice President J.D. Vance, and right before the riots started. And I have to say here, without giving license to the subversive elements showing up now, before those elements arrived, people were peacefully protesting the denial of due process to people deported, which the law and the Supreme Court says is illegal, and the Trump administration resisting the law, and which have been the cause, it seems, of the initial protests. Not because of Soros. I suggest that had Trump not tried to make a political statement and take political advantage over deportation, had he said nothing publicly but began to fine deportees and not deny due process, this would not be the issue it is now. But he wanted to make a political point and ignored the law and his oath. And he wanted something his administration and the influencers out there with him could crow about. It's all about worldwide entertainment SmackDown wrestling, isn't it? To follow the law wouldn't have made a scene in the Kabuki Theater episode. No one to dive off the ropes. No entertaining cover could be made from a foreign agenda to advance. And that's, again, the influencers that step forward, the ones with undue influence who start paying attention. So who is this apparent foreign agent of undue Trump administration influence? Someone with so much influence and access, not unlike the Zionist organization AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, who also, in response to criticism, this Zionista promoting even vicious genocide apologist stated, instead of making an objection to the Qatar jet public, the objection could have been made in a private conversation to Trump. Laura, some say Larry, Loomer, posted on X Twitter, quote, "Time to deploy Palantir Tech to Los Angeles to deal with the illegals." You know you'd love to see it. You're lying if you say you wouldn't. Well, first off, no, I wouldn't love it, and no, I'm not a liar. And be careful on who you call an illegal today. When my listener under 9/11 is an illegal, you're a criminal as you live and breathe. So, I don't love it, and I'm not a liar. How about you? Would you be loving it? Would you be lying if you said you didn't love it? See, this Loomer creature appears to be at least a raving techno-fascist that is naturally anti-liberty and anti-privacy. Isn't it better to presume someone advocating for a Big Brother surveillance state is a subversive agent than to give license that they're on your side? Do you want an Israeli CEO company admitting to hunting down and murdering innocent people in Israel's genocide, or to the last Ukrainian, the same genocide in Palestine J.D. Vance can't see because he doesn't believe Netanyahu intends to murder every Palestinian? Let's just look past the little detail in J.D.'s professed faith that thou shalt not murder, right, Pope Leo? And where are you in stopping this, as I think about it, Pope Leo? Do you want an Israeli-run war criminal surveillance company that is also in Ukraine? The same Ukraine peacemaker Trump allowed Israel to donate mostly old, ineffective Patriot air defense missiles to? If Israel is not a central intelligence player and central to what's going on there as well? And I think it was like 12 missile systems, not one. The Israeli ambassador just recently suggested that the U.S. not Israel move, so that Israel didn't have to say it transferred anything and could deny it did. But he just admitted that they were doing that, even though there was these denials. And the next layer of deception. Oh, Israel didn't lift a finger. No, those were United States systems anyway, likely on lease. And so we see the control that Trump has over all that equipment. When we start listening as to what the intention of the President of the United States might be relative to not wanting to help or aid Israel in what it's doing. Again, deception, one after the other. And I also think it is that Netanyahu and his ilk could deny the sun in broad daylight. Right, Greta? And like they deny having nuclear weapons through ambiguity. I think Iran may have something to say, and in that, I think that'll be pretty interesting, as we are seeing that exactly happening right now. It's too soon in the fog of war to figure out what's really been going on. I'll get a little bit of story to that in a moment. That's really the super big news that's happening at the same time. But do you want an Israeli Palantir tech to profit by its technology to further the agenda of the United States government to track, trace, behaviorally control, tax, or kill you to deal with a matter the government caused when Trump failed to honor the Constitution he took an oath to uphold? And while they all deny the purpose of the technology is to track, trace, and behaviorally control, tax, and kill you? Is that what over-influenced Loomer is imposing and calling people a liar if they disagree? Sounds like Mossad logic to me. Again, go back to the post. Go and see what she wrote. She wants Palantir Tech to find illegals. Who defines what an illegal is? Especially when no one's looking at the law or could care less about it. So together with Loomer's suggestion to use Palantir Tech and to the rave reviews of the duped, it seems to me the Trump administration points to its duty to protect local cops and will arrest lawlessness when it was Trump who originally acted lawlessly in deporting people without due process, so says the Supreme Court and numerous other courts now, which the people were started reacting to and protesting about, which they have the right to, their First Amendment right to. What morality drives Trump to accept the influence of deceivers and liars as well? What about J.D. Vance receiving Loomer? And then to whose benefit? And no, Democrats offer no one better. Again, this is not about politics. It's about principle, reason, thinking, facts, not suggestions, not allegations. It certainly cannot be to the benefit of those of us that speak truth to power to try to provide that dose of reality or help to make order out of the chaos to avoid it. It was just last episode I exposed again the desire of these controlling governments to construct the Palantir panopticon, heavy on the con, and that wasn't the only episode exposing totality of the imminent Siberian Gulag. How is it this influencer promotes the same tools as the Mossad, CIA, NSA, FBI, Congress, and Trump, or any totalitarian regime, as a first response. Why does Trump just say the Trump administration intends to provide the lawful due process that's required? Why doesn't he just say that? And then obviously do it. Just as the Biden and Obama administrations before him provided to millions of people deported at the time without any protests. And remember, the protests, the freedom to speak, it's paramount in this. People are giving this up. I don't understand why there's a big argument about the fact that we get the right to do this. The freedom to speak is to be protected by government, not attacked. I think in all the noise, people are missing this fundamental detail. Part of this began, Free Palestine aside for now, is that people have a right to protest warrantless arrest by ICE. Remember, Americans have been arrested by the Trump on ICE administration. The failure of fundamental due process, that should be a prevailing interest to every American, so-called. What the LA riots are is not about Democrats or Republicans or making America great again, right? CIA hyphen Mossad. And why you shoot members of the press, too, an IDF specialty. Did big tech get together in this coup to program the Waymo vehicles to be in the area to be firebombed like a Tesla dealership cars were? And how is it that Laura Loomer is so connected as to be recognized as the one identifying the brick thrower sought by the cops and to receive a $50,000 reward suggested by another poster? Sounds like money laundering to me to support an enemy within. And all this rioting is just in time to provide the impetus to support the big, beautiful bull on much more immigration and Palantir surveillance, too. And for debt. More debt. Interest to the bankers. On your back. And my suspicions are bolstered by the celebrity influencers and apparently clueless postings of those like Cat Turd 2, but doesn't seem to have cat-like instincts or caution or question, but cheerlead from Florida, as he and others do, while Governor of Florida Ron DeSantis promotes Republican Party ruling superiority, which all just seems so contrived to me as I'm watching it. He even advocates the same deportation policy and actions that Trump declared unlawful by the Supreme Court. And if J.D. Vance makes a material mistake, Ron DeSantis is a contender for the office of president, isn't he? And in particular, if all the Democrat Party candidates are taken out in ops across the nation in one form or t'other, so what is really going on here? Inmates running the asylum here, indeed. The government is full of psychopaths. One evidence of many is that they support genocide by any excuse. And my ex-Twitter feed, forced feeding me here, is full of people cheerleading for the sacrifice of fundamental freedoms and compromise of privacy and civil liberties. Though I won't here define what freedom actually is, despite my efforts in the past, such as the ignorance of the people, and not much different than those demanding civil rights, as opposed to the mentioning civil liberties I just did, which is better, but still problematic when, for instance, liberty is applied to the current ship of state, and we understand what liberty is from a military standpoint, a naval standpoint. Why do all these influencers opt for blind bondage as the first answer is why none of them can be trusted, even if they aren't the enemies from within? And I'm mentioning these things about those like Cat Turd without knowing anything about him, but look at their following. If they didn't come through my ex-Twitter propaganda curated feed, I wouldn't even know they existed. And he's probably a great guy, but he doesn't get behind the woodshed. And as I've shown regularly and routinely, not identifying the miscreant quickly and dealing directly with them effectively will bring nothing but trouble in the future. And as I think on that, the question, did you vote for this? We see this all the time now. I voted for this. Did you vote for this? Is one of the most vacuous and empty-headed inquiries I've heard of in a long time. Wanting to identify illegal immigrants and deporting them at any cost to make the pain go away, to stop the rioting, or to stop riots the government allowed or even planned to be formed, and thinking your vote has anything to do with it, is not we the people, meaning our duty to vigilance for the purpose of identifying maladministration of government, or acting to alter or abolish the tyranny that may develop in the absence of both. Now, part of the proof, among other objectives of the riots, that this is the Republican Party offensive against the Democrats, fielding a viable presidential candidate in this story here, that, and remember, Noisome Newsom was doing a predictably terrible job before for his happy voters, and that part is being exploited right now. And I appreciate that they are exploiting it. The point is, I'm not looking at all the things, the Republicans got the Democrats are losing, all that. Forget that. We're looking at underlying principles. We're watching people that are programming the society to get what they want. But not the people, not the society, but the people who are doing the exploitation. Someone was paying critical attention to the Summer of Love and the habits of the riotous beast that we came through. Remember, we were talking back when the money was being spent. And we see that they're doing and taking advantage, if what I'm seeing might be the case here, relative to the Republican Party taking advantage of something they knew that was coming, or helping to foment, in order to incapacitate or decapitate the Democratic Party. And again, this is just one angle of many. I'm going to mention a couple more here as I go. Again, to see what all the potentials are, who the players might be, as they take us down as a society, as America gets pulled down by the weight of the offensive, by many, many peoples that don't believe the organic establishment was worthy of the experiment. Trump urges California governor to apologize to Los Angeles residents for horrible job. U.S. President Donald Trump has urged California Governor Gavin Newsom and a Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass to apologize to the people of Los Angeles for the horrible job they both had done amid the protests. A raid by United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, to identify illegal immigrants in downtown Los Angeles on June 7th escalated into clashes with protesters. That same day, Newsom threatened that the state could refuse to pay federal taxes in response to possible large-scale cuts in the federal funding by the Trump administration. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt to Beaver said on June 8th that 2,000 National Guard forces would be deployed in the city amid protests. Quote, Governor Gavin Newsom and Mayor Bass should apologize to the people of Los Angeles for the horrible job that they have done, and this now includes the ongoing LA riots, Trump said on Truth Social. Again, Truth Social, not an official channel. You see the digital, the Siberian gulag communication system, the Palantir Panopticon kite system of communication, is in full swing right now already. And we have been able to see in the last few months that Truth Social, like Crumble, is Wall Street speak. It's not free speak. Earlier, the California Governor Gavin Newsom demanded the Pentagon Chief Pete Hegseth cancel the deployment of the National Guard in Los Angeles amid protests in the city against the United States government's immigration policies. Quote, I have formally requested the Trump administration rescind their unlawful deployment of troops in Los Angeles County and return them to my command, Newsom said on X. And interesting, and I haven't been able to track too much of it down, it's going really too fast for me, but I understand a court just came back and ordered the very same thing, even though the governor lost that first one. However, on the taxation, I think it's going to be a crime for him to withhold the federal taxes. He doesn't have that power. Again, the focus for me here on this is that president actually put his post on Truth Social. And then Newsom responded on X Twitter. So our communication lines aren't even meeting, I guess. At any rate, in addition, the governor of California called the decision of the United States federal authorities a violation of the state's sovereign rights. And California is traditionally considered a Democratic stronghold, and Trump has repeatedly criticized it. Well, this may be a party attack right here to try and take this out. And I think very well clearly this can be seen to be a political cause, the LA riots, part of which could be a political cause that was taken advantage of. As they, anybody who looked at this could do that. You see them, they delineated the steps that they knew were going to come down. Somebody who was a strategist could have figured out how to exploit that. And I think that's part of what we're looking at here. And I don't believe this reference to be inconsequential in the ongoing transformation of America into the Siberian Gulag and Palantir Panopticon. And the criticism from both sides in this war could be correct. Maybe we need to pay attention to that criticism as well to further inform us about the Uniparty. And how close might we be to full federal enforcement? Holding the federal Trump card? Might the excuse of an unnamed La Raza movement come to the rescue? Why did Jewish Mexican president just threaten the United States more than once? Convenient helper, wouldn't she be? Trump hints at big move invoking the Insurrection Act. President Trump still has a big and controversial card he could play in regard to Los Angeles' protests, invoking the Insurrection Act. If there's an insurrection, I would certainly invoke it, he told reporters on Tuesday, reporter reports Reuters. We'll see. The 1807 Act, quote, is among the most extreme emergency powers available to a sitting president. It allows the president to summon U.S. troops to put down domestic unrest. Let me just interject. It means it's not happening yet because he hasn't ordered it. And I think this becomes the problem after, if the report I had about the court putting the National Guard back into Newsom's hands is correct. That might be the reason here. Remember, Trump just throws it out there, but he doesn't actually have the proof, no evidence, that he has that authority. Yes, Trump already has ordered the Marines and the National Guard to Los Angeles under separate legal authority, but their duties are legally limited to protecting federal property and personnel. If Trump invokes the act, they could directly intervene against protesters. Critics, including the Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal, view that Trump has done Critics, including Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal, view what Trump has done as a backdoor way of invoking the act. Trump has been using language that appears to be laying the groundwork for invoking the act. On Monday, for example, he described protesters as insurrectionists and professional agitators. Well, these folks in the Uniparty should know about it. That's what Trump was put under, right? That's what the protesters were put under in J6. And no such insurrection ever existed. They just made it up. At least Trump's trying to give it the right words this time. I guess he learned something there, didn't he? However, at another point on Monday, he said, I wouldn't call it an insurrection, but it could have led to an insurrection. The CNN piece notes that top Trump aide Stephen Miller has been using the term regularly to describe protests. That's just a matter of mental programming for people. No different than the Democrats did during J6. An insurrection, quote, is generally defined as a violent revolt or rebellion against the government, writes Aaron Blake. It, quote, isn't about the level of violence, it's about the target and purpose of it. When asked to define it, Trump himself said, quote, you actually really just have to look at the site to see what's happening, close quote. Now, let me just interject. Is that the definition? And we see the failure of Trump over and over and over. I'm not quite sure why he does this to himself. He doesn't have to. And I've talked about this, not just Trump, but many, many people. The great COVID swindle was a good one for everybody. Every health official, every governor, every surgeon general, all failed the law. All they had to do was go to law and quote it. That's all they had to do. But they don't do that. And that's how we got programmed as a people to accept far short of what the offices of government are supposed to be executing in their jobs, their duties, and their obligations. The last time the act was used was in 1992 in the aftermath of the Rodney King beatings in Los Angeles. Some legal experts have warned the law is overly broad and vague, and there have been various calls for it to be reformed to provide greater checks on presidential power, writes Alexander Hutzler. So we'll listen for a shift in focus from chaos to target the government and its function as we listen here, and you should listen for this. No, not what the function has turned into, the stated pretense allowing the usurpation to continue, but the actual. Hegseth won't commit to obeying court on L.A. protests. And this is a bit striking. As I said, you know someone, you see them. You've got a president that doesn't really know the law, doesn't quote the law, waits for the attorneys to tell him after the fact, doesn't really care about it. Once he finds out, he'll try it a bunch of times. He's got administration that doesn't look at the law. He started at warp speed, where the whole nation got the bribed into not looking at the law. And now we have the military saying he won't commit to obeying. Not that he's saying anything. He's just not committing that he'll obey a court order. Now, there's no courts actually in the country. What kind of a country are you living in? He says local judges shouldn't be determining national security policy. What's his opinion mean? What does that mean? A federal judge will deal with California Gavin Newsom's request to block troops from taking part in immigration raids on Thursday, but it's not clear if Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth will respect the decisions if he disagrees with them. You really got to think about what this is saying, folks. I've been talking about this for years and years, this condition. This has been the closest, actually, the administration is the closest to actually exposing what I think I've proven over and over and over again. During a House Armed Services Committee hearing Thursday, Hegseth would not commit to obeying court rulings on the deployment of Marines and National Guard troops President Trump has ordered. Democratic Representative Ro Khanna asked Hegseth, quote, whatever the federal district court decides, you will abide it? Hegseth said it was a pending situation. Quote, what I will tell you is my job right now is to ensure the troops that we have in Los Angeles are capable of supporting law enforcement, he said. When asked again, Hegseth said, quote, what I can say is we should not have local judges determining foreign policy or national security policy for the country. He repeated the answer when he was asked, so you're willing to say you would respect those decisions? The 700 Marines sent to Los Angeles, quote, are still conducting pre-mission training, and they have not been employed by Task Force 51, kind of like close to Area 51, ain't it? The DOD command element in Los Angeles, and a U.S. Northern Command spokesperson said Wednesday, per The Hill, quote, I do not have an estimate on when they will be employed. So what is national security when the judicial has no power to determine constitutionally defensible government action? Earlier this week, Hegseth said he expects the administration's use of the National Guard to be stepped up. I think we're entering another phase, especially under President Trump, with his focus on the homeland, where the National Guard and reserves become critical component of how we secure the homeland, he said. So the homeland is secure, not the American Republic, in these post-founding father era Lincolnized, more perfectus, stinking onion, union, at this point in time. And the summer of let them eat chaos wouldn't be complete without a U.S. government-sponsored Islamic terror threat enhancement. Islamic terror leader calls for Trump J.D. Vance assassinations over pro-Israel views in disturbing video. Take revenge. Remember, I just pointed out the definition in the article was a function. You take out the, you go after the function of government, and now you're looking at an insurrection at least to start with. And what do you think the next report comes out to tell us? Someone's coming after the function of government. Saeed bin Ataf al-Awlaki, the newest leader of the group Al-Qaeda, we pronounce it behind which it Al-CIA, from the Arabian Peninsula, or AQAP, issued the disturbing call in a propaganda video released on Sunday, as he encouraged Muslims in the U.S. to take revenge. The Al-CIA, who'd have thunk it in a million years? But wait, the guy behind the woodshed just did, in 5 seconds. Al-CIA, those that the Israel and U.S. sponsored is us, now running Syria, steps up as if on cue to threaten the function of the United States. The leader of a heinous Islamist terror group has called the president and scores of his top advisors to be assassinated as revenge for their pro-Israel stances. Heinous too, folks, now. Saad bin Al-Tef al-Waqi, the newest leader of the Al-Qaeda, in his call, al-Waqi said, "Do not consult anyone about killing infidel Americans," he said in a sick clip. "Go after the scum of the earth and its greatest criminals." These are Trump and his vice president, J.D. Vance, his advisor and his supporters in terms of finance, administration, and technology. Sick? He said sick. Is that good or bad? Sick. Dude. Duder. Dudette. Killer. Right? Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, and even Elon Musk were among the advisors named, sources said. Now, sources said. Why don't we just go to the guy? Quote, "After them and their families and all those who have any ties or are close to the politicians of the White House, there are no red lines after all that have been happening to our people in Gaza." Elsewhere, al-Awlaki, for whom the United States Department has issued a $6 million bounty, and note here, the leader of Syria had a $10 million bounty on his head by the United States until his ousted Assad. Al-Awlaki praised the subjects who have carried out a spate of recent anti-Semitic terror attacks, as well as those behind the prior assassination attempts of Trump. Did you know that, folks? They figured it out but never told you until right now. Okay, anti-Semitic. Like Satan Yehu established Hamas to commit genocide without any intention to murder, right, J.D. Vance? Sort of points to the real let-them-eat-chaos culprits M.O., don't it? In the 34-minute video titled Inciting the Believers, the terror leader also called for strikes on Jews. Quote, "Do not leave a single safe place for Jews, just as they have not left any homes, shelters, or respite for the Palestinians." So, right on cue, Al-CIA, provides the missing puzzle piece from the United States President's domestic trump card. How convenient, don't you all think? Now, does the WWE Manhattan Mauler have the cojones, excuse my French, cojones, not to be confused with mayonnaise, but C.A., Calihones, to play that hand in L.A. without anyone noticing? Or is he just betting on that taco? And the ruckus out west, at the same time as another performance in the three-ring circus to hide the setup of the next act, the Palestinian genocide on the dark side of the world, as the opening act of the bigger showdown to come this week, in this last week that came up right at the end, Israeli Defense Minister says Army will not allow ship carrying Greta Thunberg to reach Gaza. Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz said on Sunday that he will not allow humanitarian ship Madeleine carrying Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg to reach the coast of the Gaza Strip. I have instructed the Israeli Defense Force to act to prevent the Madleen flotilla from reaching the Gaza Strip. I say clearly to anti-Semitic Greta and her friends, you should turn back, because you will not reach Gaza, Kat said, quoted as saying by the Israeli Defense Minister. He added that that Israel will not allow anyone to violate maritime blockade of Gaza, and said that the goal of the blockade is to prevent transfer of weapons to Palestinian movement Hamas, which continues to hold Israeli hostages. Did you hear the lie and the indefensible admission to committing war crimes from Zionist Kat? And wouldn't it be so interesting if from out of nowhere, a gaggle, a gob, and a bunch of unflagged military-grade drones show up and start attacking the anti-Semitic Israeli ships that are attacking a humanitarian effort in defense of the international law-required help to the Semitic people of Palestine? And certainly by now, being on the Mediterranean Sea, young Greta knows there is a sun. Well, we can only hope. This is BTW RLM 632. And on to a despicable main act here, as we did get through the end of the week and started to get the news on what's going on, and now it's kind of just helter-skelter, I suppose, with anything that's going to come on in the next few months. I suppose this is going to go on and on. I gave Iran chance after chance, Trump says. Despite the Israeli strikes, the U.S. president has urged Tehran to comply with Washington's demands over its nuclear program, quote, before it's too late. Is Trump making those demands, or does he have a rat in his pocket? The Israeli military conducted a series of airstrikes on numerous targets across Iran early on Friday, including military and nuclear sites. Quotes. Nuclear glowing postulated cricketism. On nuclear sites in Iran. It is being reported also now that radiation is being measured as being released inside the facility that was struck. The Iranian authorities have confirmed that the attacks killed Major General Hossein Salami, the commander of Iran's elite Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, and Major General Mohammad Bagheri, the chief of staff of the Iranian armed forces. Several media outlets have claimed that several other high-ranking Iranian military commanders and nuclear scientists also perished. In a post on Truth Social platform later on Friday, Trump wrote that he gave Iran chance after chance to make a deal on its nuclear program, telling the Iranian leadership in the strongest of words to just do it. The U.S. head of state suggested that he had warned Tehran that failure to comply with Washington's demands would result in a massive Israeli attack, noting that its military is armed with a large number of U.S.-made weapons. According to Trump, while Israel is prepared to carry out further, even more brutal attacks against Iran, there is still a possibility to reverse the escalation. This is before Iran even responds. Describing Israel's strike as on Iran is excellent on Friday and warned that there's a lot more to come unless Tehran agrees to a nuclear deal. I think it's been excellent, Trump said, commenting on the attack. We gave them a chance and they didn't take it. They got hit hard, very hard. They got hit about as hard as you're going to get hit, and there's more to come, a lot more. We? Does Trump have a rat in his pocket? Who is we? And how can he know the future unless the peace taker is a part of committing the premeditated, unwarranted attack for rejecting a deal that Iran can't refuse? Iran must make a deal before there is nothing left, and save what was once known as the Iranian Empire, the president insisted. 2 months ago, I gave Iran a 60-day ultimatum to make a deal. They should have done it, Trump wrote. I told them what to do, but they just couldn't get there. Now they have perhaps a second chance. Since April, the United States and Iran have held several rounds of talks in Oman about Tehran's nuclear program, but no breakthrough has emerged. The next encounter was scheduled for Sunday, but following the Israeli strikes, the Islamic Republic has reportedly withdrawn. Doesn't sound different than Trump's war invitation to armistice for Iran and the terms dictated by the Don. Can't be anything other than an admission the U.S. is in an undeclared war with Iran and has been. So any of the recent meetings with Iran are also a duplicitous ruse, a lie, a deception. And no one in the world can trust Trump now, other than to be a duplicitous thug is not terrific, not too beautiful. Trump's utterly failed again at being a peacemaker. He's complicit if he actually hasn't done anything, but I can't see it. Trump isn't the deal maker, he claims, either, more than an organized criminal syndicate don that believes he makes deals you can't refuse and hopes in his failure to make a deal with Iran, the prior deal from which Trump actually broke originally, that a couple punches by his hitmen will be enough for Iran to capitulate, can only put Trump in a negative light before the whole world. He might as well kiss any peacemaker legacy goodbye, even if Trump had nothing at all to do with the unwarranted attack on Iran. Trump looks bad, very bad. Complicit, even. The people didn't vote him into office to go to war. And that's one thing I can appreciate with those that are now seeing the truth. The cheerleaders are now starting to see. And they're starting to say that. Trump appears more so a PAC compromise, not a man in charge of the office of President of the United States. And who is Trump or Satan Yehu to dictate Iran's civilian nuclear power programs and other non-weapon needs? So it appears the WWE Manhattan Mauler is conducting an unwarranted war attacking Iran because Iran embarrassed him when not agreeing to his absurd demands, or that he had no moral or legal authority to make. Whether Iran survives or not will not change these facts. Trump has let America down yet again. And what is more embarrassing is he didn't have to go this way. He could have been the man he claimed he wanted to be. But that would have taken uncompromising backbone. And in all this chaos all this week, more and more stuff going on. And remember I talked about Singham in the LA riots, him coming from the Chinese support side. We had this story. However, I find an interesting problem with the vigor upon which they're dealing with this one, but it brings up a different story right after this one. Third, a Chinese scientist charged with smuggling materials. A Chinese scientist was arrested while arriving in the United States at the Detroit airport, the second case in days involving alleged smuggling. Let's get that, alleged smuggling of biological materials. The scientist is accused of shipping biological material months ago to staff at a laboratory at the University of Michigan. The FBI in a court filing described it as material related to certain worms that requires a government permit. Quote, the guidelines for importing biological materials into the United States for research purposes are stringent but clear. And actions like this undermine legitimate work of other visiting scholars, said John Nowak, who leads field operations at U.S. Customs and Border Protection. The scientist was interviewed and arrested Sunday after arriving on a flight from China, where she is pursuing an advanced degree at Haozhong University of Science and Technology in Wuhan. She planned to spend a year completing a project at the University of Michigan. Her shipments included an envelope stuffed inside a book, were intercepted last year and earlier this year and opened by authorities, the FBI said. The court filing doesn't indicate whether the FBI believes the biological material was risky, though U.S. Attorney Jerome Cargon Jr. said smuggling, quote, threatens our security. The scientist remains in custody awaiting a bond hearing Wednesday. She allegedly shipped worms-related material to the U.S. for research without government permit. It's a permit violation? That's it? All this for that? And I'm saying that because of this next story. Just a government permit. Not something proven to be like 100% fatal to people, like the South Korean lab making bird flu 100% lethal to mammals. That's printed in a virology journal. Even a small proportion of mammalian adaptive mutations can quickly become dominant as the virus serially transmits between mammals, Kunkuk University researcher writes. South Korean scientists have conducted a lab experiment that made a purported wild avian influenza bird flu virus 100% lethal in mammals, achieving total death in infected mice by enabling the virus to adapt inside their bodies and spread to others. The dangerous move comes as the United States develops a next-generation universal vaccine platform called Generation Gold Standard that will focus on avian influenza jab creation, signaling a coordinated international push to engineer and preemptively vaccinate against lab-enhanced bird flu strains with pandemic potential. Despite worldwide fallout from the COVID-era strategies. Published June 2025 in Virology Journal, the study describes how researchers at Kunkuk University infected mice with a highly pathogenic H5N1 avian influenza strain, one that already contained a small percentage, 4%, of mammalian adaptive mutation known as PB2-E627K. That tiny minority of mutant viruses was enough to take over and kill every infected host. All challenged mice died by 8-DPC. Transmission through direct contact occurred in 100% of the cases, and all contact mice died within 12 days. Oh, but let's arrest a Chinese scientist studying in American universities for not having a permit. That'll keep us safe, no doubt. And as we're trying to keep our little ones safe, we're going to go over toward Montana. Montana governor signs a bill ending vaccine records mandate for high school homeschool families. Montana's new law repeals a vaccination requirement and building and reporting rules intended for densely packed public facilities that don't make sense for homeschool settings. I just have to pause there. I don't know how stupid government becomes when it sets out to control every darn thing in the world, and it's supposed to protect us against that. HB 778 repeals the requirement for homeschool parents to keep immunization records on their children and submit them with county superintendents. It also eliminates requirements for homeschool families' homes, private residences, to keep the same health and safety codes as school buildings and make homeschoolers and private schools two separate legal categories. I'm mentioning this for those of you that know about this, that are interested, you go to Montana, see what they did, grab what you can, go make it so in your school and start separating these things back out. I would caution you to understand the states identifying the parents and children. They're not talking about mothers and fathers and your offspring. And so I don't know if you're going to get that passed. They won't usually talk that way. But the children are wards of the state that you have custody as parents. Parents have custody of the child, the ward of the state. So we want to kind of get free of that too at some point. hopefully in the future. For Montana families who homeschool, HB 778 is more than just a policy update. It's a shift toward recognizing and respecting the unique nature of home education, wrote Tracy Taylor of Mix 97.1. Quote, by cutting unnecessary red tape and clearly separating homeschools from non-public schools, the law supports education freedom while still ensuring students get a solid education. And let me just interject, why would they need it? There's no interaction, right? And there's also this an interesting side benefit. If you don't have to keep the records, then you don't have to keep up with that you do or do not vaccinate. And part of the reason probably for this. Roughly 3.1 million students were homeschooled in the United States as of 2022, and on average score 15 to 25 percentile points above public school students on standardized academic achievement tests, according to data collected by the National Home Education Research Institute. So that last paragraph should be all you really need to know about homeschooling. That on average, those kids are little goats, score 15 to 25 percentile points above public school students on standardized academic achievement tests. And I've mentioned, though I didn't get the study, when they were looking at the United States government or the United States people relative to all the other people in the world, the United States didn't have but just under a 100 IQ in the world. We're not the smartest people in the world like people are told that we are. 100 IQ is only 20 points above being an idiot. So just add on 100 as an average. Just add 100. Add the 15 to 25 and you're back up to something that's kind of respectable, aren't you? It's what public school systems have done to us. So that number actually correlated, that study of the world's in IQ tests across the world really kind of correlated with that number relative to what I remember people would be generally testing out at back in the day, I guess I could say. Fascinating. So, good for you, Montana. At least mostly in part, and to keep your right as a mother and father to show your little ones the world the way you want to do without the burdens and without the threats. I commend Montana for that. Maybe not everything there up there, but nice to hear. And this is, again, can be done in other states. U.S. makes sweeping changes to key vaccine group. On the heels of that decision over there in Montana, Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says replacing pro-harma experts is key to restoring public confidence. Well, listen very carefully to this. I call it deception. But listen very carefully how they're doing this. It's key. He's going to act to restore public confidence. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has dismissed all the members of a key advisory panel that has helped shape national vaccine policy for decades. Again, I've talked about these advisory panels. They're discretionary. They're not elite. They do not have any actual power. They were given the power. So this is a little bit an innocuous condition. However, good on them to start here, for sure. I'm not condemning that part. I just wanted to understand how we're going to allow our confidence and our trust to be persuaded cannot be in here at all anyway. But that's what he's going to restore. He's going to restore public confidence. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said on Monday that the move was necessary to reestablish public trust and address longstanding concerns over conflicts of interest. The Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices was created within the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in the mid-1960s. In an op-ed published on Monday in Wall Street Journal, Kennedy claimed that this panel has, quote, a history of conflicts of interest, persecution of dissidents, a lack of curiosity, and skewed science, close quote. The Secretary cited reports from a House committee in 2000 and the HHS Inspector General in 2009 that detailed the financial connections between ACIP members and the pharmaceutical companies. He said his decision to replace all 17 current members was driven by the need for a clean slate. The problem isn't necessarily the ACIP members are corrupt, most likely aimed to serve the public interest as they understand it, Kennedy wrote. The problem is their immense immersion in a system of industry-aligned incentives and paradigms that enforce a narrow pro-industry orthodoxy. So fair enough, good for Kennedy, but that does not end the need solving the problem if government overreach or dereliction of duty is observed. And the ACIP members are appointed for 4-year terms, and 8 of the most recent appointments were made in the final days of the administration of Joe Biden. It was very intentional, the former senior HHS official told STAT News. Quote, it was our goal to fill our vacancy on every federal advisory committee the department has, with particular focus on ones like ACIP, where maintenance of our scientific expertise was critical. Mandy Cohen, who served on the CDC director under Biden, the move spreads confusion and casts doubt on transparent public health processes that protect Americans. Think back on the Comey swindle. Did that protect Americans? It was really transparent, but did it protect Americans? Richard Besser, who was acting CDC director under Barack Obama, said, quote, it should erase any remaining doubt that he intends to impose his personal anti-vaccine agenda on the American people, close quote. Kennedy has long criticized aspects of the U.S. vaccine program, arguing they are too closely aligned with industry interests and failed to prioritize public health. His detractors frequently label him as an anti-vaxxer, which seems like a stupid distraction and status quo keeping technique. I mean, Kennedy is for vaccines, including the mRNA bioweapon. And this point is completely missed. From what I've seen, no advisory committee will be constituted that will use the law to find the mRNA synthetics to be the prohibited bioweapon local and federal law defined. And remember, I didn't say it, but I'll say it now, that 100% fatal bird flu, that's a novel one too. They made that up. There's nothing natural about that. We read it over at the pig's fly flu. That would be a natural pathogen when pigs flew. During his confirmation hearings, Kennedy pledged that his decisions would be science-driven. In his WSJ piece, he warned against attributing the American public's crisis of trust solely to misinformation or anti-scientific attitudes. So this is a lot of noise over legally inert body under federal law. There's nothing that that advisory body can offer that can compel the lead agency to act. And an advisory committee is strictly that, advisory. The suggestions from which are discretionary. At this point, it seems to me there's nothing the federal agencies can do to restore the blind trust or confidence Kennedy seeks. The best thing that the federal agencies can do now is to honor the organic establishment reservation to the states in health matters and admit federal agencies and officials are themselves merely advisory committees to the states with no lawful power to decide or compel action, the action of the local state authority. But of the dire and continuing concern for my listener here, the great Comey swindle proved that we the people can have no trust, nor can maintain a shred of confidence in the local officials either. Local officials proving the local law meant nothing to them when they were faced with the federal bribe at warp speed. Local officials everywhere, even Florida, for all the fraudulent promotions DeSantis and the state surgeon general Lapido paraded out well after the fact of their breaches, lying to the people by omission in their breach, didn't have a second thought to kill and maim any of you when ignoring their local communicable disease law and its due process protections. Never, ever forget that, folks. Ever. You can have no trust or confidence in the government, and Kennedy has no underlying power to make any trust or confidence objectively real. Any declarations coming out of the federal health agencies are advisory only. and any advice cannot be trusted without independent testing. And then you make a review for the appropriateness of the application through a private doctor-patient relationship. Then you assess the particulars of the patient would be you or maybe your little ones, their needs relative to that. And that I don't get any doctors agreeing with this, with the local law, means you cannot trust your doctor's advice either. Ultimately, Kennedy can't guarantee your trust in your world as against all the advice of the world. And you should never give them your trust and confidence, being your life could depend on it. You need to become your own trusted, educated first opinion, and the doctor should be the second or third opinions, providing for better confidence of all these things that are considered, to steal a phrase, that it is the best decision for you. And as we're looking for the best decisions of ourselves and our government and how it's run and maybe not seeing what's going on, as I've been talking about the exploitive conditions that appear to be what we might see coming out of the LA riots and all that, and all the who's that could be done it. Who is doing it over there? We finally get records, possibly a bit more, from way back when. All the time it takes to get this information. Why we can't trust the government. I have no confidence in it myself. I don't know about y'all. We got to wait this long to get information. There's nothing, no trust left. That people don't get that out of the COVID swindle, something I predicted would happen, and it happened, and it's still happening. And then I tell you today what looks to be a fix from the department right now to bring in more advisors to show you that's just ineffectual. And they want to use that to get your trust, shows they're not trustable. Or they don't understand what they're doing, which is still not trustable. Well, we finally get some information, different study, but a same possible underlying agency, even relative to the LA riots. The CIA released a new batch of declassified documents surrounding the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy in 1968, acting on an executive order that President Trump issued soon after taking office. This is the father of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Kennedy was shot and killed by Sirhan Sirhan after the Democratic presidential primary in California in June 1968. 4.5 years after President John F. Kennedy, his brother, was slain in Dallas. Let me just offer, without too much more comment, that may not be so true. If you look and research this, there's so much more information out there that maybe someone else done it. And when you read, see the description of these records that have come through, they were trying to study Sirhan Sirhan's mentality about this to try and figure out why he would have done it. And so, there's an interesting question around all these things as well, over and atop even this, but we're going to be handed some documentation. Sirhan, a Palestinian with Jordanian citizenship, said later that he killed RFK because RFK's support for Israel in the Six-Day War in 1967. Quote, the records reveal for the first time that Senator Kennedy shared his experience traveling to the former Soviet Union with the CIA, reflecting his patriotic commitment to serving his country, the CIA said in a statement accompanying the release. The disclosure includes 54 newly declassified documents totaling 1,450 pages. They include news articles, dispatches from overseas, CIA stations, intelligence reports on foreign officials, investigative updates, and correspondence between the CIA and other agencies like the State Department and the Department of Justice. The longest document runs 814 pages and details the response to the assassination of CIA outposts and USA embassies around the world, with agents in numerous countries following leads about Sirhan's background and potential motivation. Mr. Trump ordered the intelligence community to review and release the documents related to the RFK, JFK, and Martin Luther King Jr. assassinations in an executive order in January. Last episode I said, you're not going to probably hear those are MLK files, sometime soon for sure. Quote, today's release delivers on President's commitment to maximum transparency enabling the CIA to shine a light on information that serves the public interest, CIA Director John Ratcliffe said in a statement about the new documents. So really, I really dislike seeing the redactions pursuant to Trump's limitation that serves the public interest. That is, it serves the government's interest, not that of the people. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., RFK's son, welcomed the release in a statement. Lifting the veil on the RFK papers is necessary toward restoring trust in American government, the younger RFK said. So how is the veil lifted on a redacted document? How does that restore trust? Welfare, not warfare, thousands protest in London against austerity cuts. And if these last few stories you don't think are all tied together, really think again. Again, they start moving this thing around, they make it look like it's more trustable. And I'm bringing up the questions of how you can trust, because we really can't. Because when you look at what the documents say, where everything's pointing, notwithstanding what's being said about where people want it to go, we continue down to the future that they want. Welfare, not warfare. 1,000 protests in London against austerity cuts, and not hardly anybody wants to stop war anymore, it seems, does it? So that's part of the plan. I've said it's part of the plan. The paperwork says it's part of the plan. We go to war. Thousands of people marched through central London on Saturday to protest government spending cuts and welfare reforms, voicing outrage over rising military budgets amid deepening social inequality. The demonstration organized by the People's Assembly began on Portland Place and made its way to Whitehall, with group crowds chanting and holding placards reading "Tax the Rich," "Nurses Not Nukes," "Welfare Not Warfare." Do you really want welfare, though? I mean, there's actually two types of welfare. Do you really want this welfare? Tax the rich? Do you want to agree to extort from somebody else? You want the government to extort from people? Is that what we're wanting here? See, so even our protests are feeding into a condition that we really shouldn't be going, "Nurses, not nukes." Sure, why not? That seems pretty safe enough, unless they're the ones that are injecting you with the jabs to come, right? Trade unionists, campaigners, and activists from across the UK joined the protests under the slogan, "No to Austerity 2.0. You get cracked up about this stuff, folks? "No Austerity 2.0, calling on the Labour government to abandon austerity policies and invest in public services instead of warfare. Campaigners condemned Prime Minister Keir Starmer's economic agenda." What did he just say right there? Economic agenda. What did I tell you Agenda 2030 was? Sustainable debtors. Go read it. Economic. Accusing his cabinet of hiding behind the so-called fiscal rules while enacting cuts that deepen poverty, erode social protections, and widening inequality. Quote, "Scrapping winter fuel payments, keeping the Tory two-child benefit cap, cutting disability support, and slashing foreign aid while boosting defense spending are not tough choices that are political choices," a spokesman for the People's Assembly said. "Feels like what I'm having to do, from austerity to austere. Agenda 2030 here and gone already to 2.0 and beyond, it seems." Do you hear that admission? They agree to live in austerity 1.0. Pretty amazing. They have a complaint about 1.0. They've been living it. Now comes the sustainable debt, the perpetual debtor's prison of the Siberian Gulag. And if you think that war's not on the horizon, look around you, folks. Look at what's going on. And maybe austerity is not limited to the UK, just as Agenda 2030 says that they want. World Bank sees U.S. growth being cut in half. Now remember, the way this is going down, it's got to increase by 7%. But that's if the big beautiful bull would be correct and it would do the things it needs to do to drop the fiscal expenditures for the government. The World Bank forecast on Tuesday that President Trump's trade wars are expected to slash economic growth this year in the United States and around the world, citing a substantial rise in trade barriers. But without mentioning Trump by name, the 189-country lender predicted that the U.S. economy, the world's largest, would grow half as fast, 1.4 this year, as it did in 2024. That marks the downgrade from the 2.3 U.S. growth it had forecast in 2025 in January. We go back a little bit to that 189-country lender that keeps nations in poverty. Globally, the bank has lopped 0.4% percentage points off of its forecast for global growth this year. It now expects the world economy to expand just 2.3% in 2025, down from 2.8% in 2024. Let me also point out here the word growth. Why does there always have to be growth at all? Is one of the problems. It's best practices for stealing wealth from people. No soft landing? In a foreword to the latest versions of a twice-yearly global economic prospects report, World Bank chief economist Indermit Gill wrote that the global economy has missed its chance for a soft landing. You're listening, folks, to prepare. We've been talking about all this, how it's working. Slowing enough to tame inflation without generating serious pain, it appeared headed for just 6 months ago. The world economy today is once more running into turbulence, Gill wrote. Without a swift course correction, the harm to living standards could be deep. So this is not just in the UK looking at austerity 2.0. That cracks me up. They're agreeable to 1.0. We're all living in 1.0, and now we're moving on to 2.0. And it seems war is global. No peacemakers out there, are there? And if, again, we could come back over to this side, if Canada thinks they're escaping this Siberian gulag dragnet, Canada's the new border law hides a surveillance time bomb. Again, these identities, these digital identities, are what they're going to be. This austerity comes through to control us. Sustainable debtor is how they do it. It's written in Agenda 2030. It's not just some UN document of whatever. Go read it. It tells you exactly how this is going to be coming down. And there's nothing that I have seen that has been away from that. Nothing Trump does evades that at all. Nothing. Buried beneath the rhetoric of national security. See, every nation has that excuse, don't they? Buried beneath the rhetoric of national security is a digital dragnet designed to sidestep the courts. Canada's new Strong Border Act, tabled as Bill C-2, is being framed by the federal government as a step toward strengthening border security. But hidden within its lengthy legislative text is a familiar and troubling push for expanded surveillance powers, this time without the need for court authorization. Nestled deep in the bill are provisions that grant law enforcement sweeping new authority to demand subscriber data from service providers, bypassing the oversight mechanisms long seen as essential to protecting Canadians' privacy. Can it be anywhere, folks? The same language over and over. The bill revives the lawful access agenda, one that law enforcement agencies have been pursuing since late 1990s. I'm pausing. I can't help but pause right there. What have I been saying? It's been even before that. But that's when they started to get it together. We've been dealing underneath this sustainable nonsense since right around the late 70s. It actually started back in the 50s, but when we started to see it, then in the 80s, it was being written about as being now put into play. In the United States, your tax laws, your land use laws were changed around the 70s. and it all started to reflect all this stuff. The digital access provisions are not new, but their inclusion in border-focused bill appears to be a calculated effort to quietly reintroduce them under a different guise. Let me just call your attention here to the ICE in the news now and what it's using these databases about, and it's all about cross-border and even American citizens. United States citizens are a part of that surveillance, coming and going. Despite being repeatedly rebuffed by public opposition, parliamentary committees and Canada's highest court, the drive to erode digital privacy protections continues. This legislative maneuver follows years of setbacks for warrantless access advocates. It's the same problem with ICE. These are all warrantless arrests. They're administrative on top of that. No judicial right, no judicial power whatsoever in them. In 2014, the Supreme Court ruled decisively in R. v. Spencer that Canadians have a legitimate expectation of privacy when it comes to subscriber information. I'm speaking to those of you in Kanukistan. Listen to me, understand me now if you've heard me for years and years, and where you can start dropping in to start showing, if this is important to you, start showing how it's being dismantled and how you're going to keep it together. According to Michael Geist, a law professor at University of Ottawa, law enforcement has continued to seek ways around those constraints. Past efforts to legislate access without judicial oversight have either failed to pass or been dropped due to public backlash. So there's your power, people, right there. It's not voting. It's being aware and speaking out about it and doing it in large numbers so that they have to knock it down. It's when you're not looking is when they pass all this stuff. Like, that's why they hide this stuff in big bills that no one reads. That's the other trick they do. So you have to be there. And that's not fun, and it's not fair. So we got another problem, too. In other words, we shouldn't have to be doing this. The fact that you have to do it says you're an occupied people. Or there's someone that's coming to occupy you or control you even worse. You're not free from fighting from them, with them about to stop that. There's got to be a law here, folks. I mean, let's write another one that no one pays attention to. Just stop. Stop the attack. But see, this is the contention that was built into these so-called democratic systems that keeps you at each other's throats, that needs to be rethought and readdressed and made more clear that we aren't having to deal with this. We can get on with our lives instead. Despite the legal precedent, Bill C-2 is attempting to carve out a new space for surveillance. Among its more concerning features is a clause that would allow authorities to issue information demands to service providers without needing judicial approval. These demands would compel companies to confirm whether they provide services to specific users, whether they hold transmission data related to those accounts, and where the services are or were provided, both inside and outside Canada. Hear that? Both inside or outside Canada. Again, my thought flashes, this is going to be so important to be able to store your information or have it transiting encrypted so that there's nothing that they can see. This is why they're attacking it. It's why they attack end-to-end encryption. It's why they want to go after the HTTPS type thing and have a backdoor about it. This is what this is about. But even outside Canada, and you see how the United States expanded that to incorporate incidental United States citizen data on their communications in the NSA. You see it starting here. Here's the words out for Kyrgyzstan. The threshold for triggering such a demand is alarmingly low. Law enforcement must merely suspect that a crime has occurred or may occur, and that the requested information could aid an investigation. The demand doesn't require disclosing the actual data, but it functions as a roadmap to it, alerting police to which providers hold what kind of information and where it might be found. Such indirect searches effectively sidestep the very privacy protections the courts have upheld. and something else buried, but maybe we can take some advice from those that have come before us, not subject to central fiat manipulation or digital bondage. Archaeologists find intensive indigenous farming in Michigan. Ancestral Menominee farmers rework the soil to create raised fields. With its cold climate, short growing season, and dense forest, Michigan's Upper Peninsula is known as a challenging place for farming. For all of us nuclear winter looking people, for all us colder climate looking people, maybe. But a new Dartmouth-led study provides evidence of intensive farming by ancestral Native Americans at the 60 Islands archaeological site along the Menominee River, making it the most complete ancient agricultural site in the eastern half of the United States. The site features a raised ridge field system that dates around the 10th century to 1600, and much of it's still intact today. The raised fields are comprised of clustered ridged garden beds that range from 4 to 12 inches in height and were used to grow corn, beans, and squash, three sisters, and the other plants by ancestors of the Menominee Indian tribe in Wisconsin. In May 2023, after the snow had melted, but before the leaves were out, the team conducted an innovative drone-based survey of 330-acre area using LIDAR, a remote sensing technology that uses pulses of light from laser to map objects on the Earth's surface. LIDAR is a really powerful tool in any kind of forested or heavily vegetated region where the archaeology is hidden below trees, where no kind of optical imagery can see what's underneath the tree canopy, says senior author Jesse Cassana, professor of anthropology who uses remote sensing technologies regularly in his work. The forests are really confounding to archaeology in a lot of ways, so a lot of archaeologists rely on publicly available LIDAR that is often obtained from planes that fly really high. But the resolution of that data is usually too low to see many archaeological features. Drone LIDAR enables us to collect the same kind of data, but at much higher resolution. The LIDAR uncovered sets of parallel ridges at the site that create quilt-like patterns stretched across the landscape. The ridges were constructed in various directions, illustrating that their locations may have been determined by individual farmers rather than direction of the sun or other environmental factors. The findings are published in Science. The scale of this agricultural system by ancestral Menominee communities is 10 times larger than what was previously estimated, said lead author Madeline McLister, an assistant professor of anthropology at Dartmouth. That forces us to reconsider a number of preconceived ideas we have about agriculture, not only in the region, but globally. The researchers surveyed approximately 330 acres. However, they have yet to map the entire site because it extends beyond the edge of where they were surveyed. They estimate that they have surveyed approximately 40% of the site. When you look at the scale of farming, this would require the kind of labor organization that is typically associated with much larger state-level hierarchical societies, said McLister. Yet, everything we know about this area suggests smaller egalitarian societies lived in this region, but in fact, this may have been a rather large settlement. This site is part of the Anaim Amat, which stands for Dog's Belly in Menominee. The Anaim Amat is a cluster of significant ancestral Menominee archaeological sites that include several burial mounds and a village that were excavated from the 1950s through the 1970s. I found that pretty interesting. It sounds like almost like the Hugel as well on top of it. I understand that the individual farmer determined not the sun, but what he sense on the land, which I found also very interesting, written and not explained but stated there. moving in through LIDAR and getting that feel for the terrain. TSA working on haptic tech to feel your body in virtual reality. The Department of Homeland Security and the Transportation Security Administration, TSA, are researching an incredibly wild virtual reality technology that would allow TSA agents to use VR goggles, haptic feedback gloves, to allow them to pat down and feel airline passengers at security checkpoints without actually touching them. The agency calls this as a touchless sensor that allows a user to feel an object without touching it. Information sheets released by the DHS and patent application describes a series of sensors that would map a person or object's contours in real time in order to digitally replicate it within the agent's virtual reality system. It will map the contours in real time. The system would include a haptic feedback pad, which would be worn on the agent's hand. This would then allow the agent to inspect the person's body without physically touching them in order to feel weapons or other dangerous objects. A DHS information sheet released last week describes it like this. Quote, the proposed device is a wearable accessory that features touchless sensors, cameras, and haptic feedback pad. The touchless sensor system could be enabled through millimeter wave scanning, that's what I want all over my body, light detection and ranging LIDAR, or backscatter X-ray technology. That's what we want. As a user fits the device over their hand, when the touchless sensor in the device are within the range of the targeted object, the sensors in the pad detect large target's object's contours to produce sensor data. The contour detection data runs through a mapping algorithm to produce a contour map. The contour map is then relayed to the back surface of the contact user's hand through haptic feedback to physically simulate a sensation of the virtual detected contours in real time. A separate patent for the haptic feedback system, part of this shows diagrams of what the haptic glove system might look like and notes all sorts of potential sensors that could be used, from cameras, the LIDAR, to one that, quote, involves turning ultrasound into virtual touch. It adds that haptic feedback sensors can, quote, detect the contour of a target, a person, or an object at a distance, optionally penetrating through clothing to produce sensor data. X-ray glasses have nothing on this voyeurism tool, to my mind. And tied to all of that biometric profiling that they're making on you, making a 3D virtual model out of you. See and feel every mound in the state-level hierarchical society. How creepy is that? This has been BTW RLM 632, and I'll be with you next week. Tech tips for nature willing.
Echoes call the owl. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. House words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. Law to liberty, the spectrum light. In house court, no place to hide. A can of wood bass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed. Fight the truth.
the woodshed. No stone unturned, house words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. Voices gathered from near and far, house truths shine a light, the northern star. A rallying cry in the digital space, behind the woodshed, truths the ace. The sun sets, the truth still reigns in house words, freedom sings. Join us next week, heed the call.